Hello, and welcome to the Living Cruelty Free With Me podcast. My name is Claire, and I'm the creator of the blog and social media platform, Cruelty Free With Me, where my goal is to show everyone how easy it is to live a life free from harm. Now, I do this by promoting an ethical vegan lifestyle. Whether you're looking to transition into a vegan lifestyle or just looking to make some kind and conscious decisions, this podcast is for you. Together, we will change the world by spreading awareness and inspiring change. Please stay updated by following at Living Cruelty Free With Me on both Facebook and Instagram. And do not forget to hit that subscribe button to get notifications on upcoming episodes. So, for those of you that don't know Seb Alex, he is an incredible animal rights activist born and raised in the Lebanon. And then you do everything from farm investigations, university talks, activist workshops, street activism, vigils, street interviews, you name it. And I saw that you actually left your corporate job to dedicate your life to animal activism.
Yes.
That must have been scary, but a liberating transition, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was. I just thought worst case scenario, I'll just start working as a waiter or something, because I don't mind what job I do as long as I get shelter and food. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Now, what was the final push for you to do that? What were you doing for work?
I've studied architecture. I have a master's in architecture and sustainability. So I was working in a corporate company that was mostly doing hospitals and things like that, or really big projects, conference halls, and basically for big clients all around the world, including governments. Halfway through, I started doing more and more activism. I was already an activist, but I wasn't extremely active. But then around 5 or 6 months later, I started organizing activism events in Barcelona, where I used to live at the time. One of the things that made me consider quitting one day was that I was basically responsible for the international projects, because we had 7 offices around the world.
Okay.
And I received an email from the office in Panama asking me if I can help them out with a certain project. And when I started looking at the project, it was a university building, if I'm not mistaken. And In architecture, when you look at the plans of a building that's going to be built, for every single hall or room, you can put the function of the space. So like if it's a classroom, you put the classroom. If it's a kitchen, you put the kitchen. So I started reading the functions to understand the project. And I started reading rabbits, snakes, euthanasia. Yeah. And I realized I'm helping build an animal experimentation hall.
Oh my god!
Within the university. And I told my boss, I was like, we need to talk. And he's like, what's up? I said, conference room, please. And he started laughing. He said, what's going on? Because he used to sit right next to me. He's like, why does he want to talk in a conference room? So
yeah.
I explained everything. And he said, that's fine. You don't have to do it. And I was like, okay, cool. But then I was like,
but I don't want you to do it either.
Yeah. First I said, okay, cool. And then I was like, wait, no, not cool. Like, I don't want anyone to build this. And he just straight away told me, he's like, I'm sorry, Seb, but we don't have any ethics here. We just take any job that we can. And that was not the final push, but it was definitely the first time I actually considered, like, okay, there's literally basically no job out there where I'm going to be, where it's going to be completely aligned with my values. Mm-hmm. And maybe one day I can concentrate more on activism. And eventually I got so sick of the job that I decided to stop doing it and start doing activism full time.
That is crazy. So that was in Barcelona they were building that?
No, it was actually, if I'm not mistaken, it was the University of Panama, because we got the email from the office in Panama. Or maybe it was from the office of Panama, but it was in another country in South America.
And they were going to use snakes.
Yeah, it was like snakes, rabbits. I don't remember all the animals, but like there were a few rooms, and it wasn't until I read euthanasia where I was like, oh, okay, like this is what that is.
Wow, it's crazy how much that happens, and
yeah,
it's still so hidden.
Yeah, we just don't think about it because it's not out there like other industries.
Yeah, I saw on your website a quote, and it said, with the privilege to know comes the duty to act.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so powerful. And to be honest, also kind of bittersweet, because I find the more you know,
the more heartbreak.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I guess it's better to know so that you can inspire others to try and create the change needed.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you know something is happening and you know others don't know, that it kind of relies on you to raise awareness about it. You have to do something about it. You can't just turn a blind eye.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of people still do, but
I
don't have the solution for that, but
gotta raise awareness as much as we can and push people to become more and more active.
Exactly. So when did you go vegan? What made you go vegan? Was there an aha moment for you?
Yeah. So I turned vegetarian when I was 16 because I didn't know anything about veganism, but I did about vegetarianism. So I was vegetarian for 8 years. And actually, almost exactly 7 years ago, I think in 4 days it will be 7 years that I've been fully vegan.
Congrats.
I had this moment where I was like, wait, why am I drinking breast milk? It was really out of boredom. That's really how it happened. I was really bored. I was visiting my sister in Abu Dhabi, in the United Arab Emirates. And for anyone who hasn't been there or know much about it, it's a city in the middle of a desert. It's really impressive what they've made out of a desert. But at the same time, mm-hmm. because of that fact, basically the only thing you can actually do is just go to malls to spend your time in a mall, you know?
Okay.
And it's nice for my sister because she has kids and they have fun and they have playgrounds in the malls, but it's not fun for someone who's 24 years old, keep on going from one mall to the other. And they went to the mall and I was like, I'm just going to stay back. You know, I'm sick of going to malls. And I wasn't really doing anything. I was just bored. And I was so bored that I was like, wait, like milk is breast milk. That something doesn't add up. And I Googled, why don't vegans drink milk? Because the only thing I knew about veganism was that they don't consume any animal products. But I wasn't exactly sure if it's like a dietary issue that they have for their health or it's something else. And I landed upon a few videos that I watched on that day. I watched Gary Yourofsky's speech. And then I watched another speech called 101 Reasons to Go Vegan.
Those are amazing.
Yeah. And then I watched like 20 minutes from Earthlings and I was like, okay, that's it. I'm going vegan. Yeah.
that'll do it.
Yeah.
And so were you eating cheese too? Or were you just drinking milk at that point?
No, I was like a dietary vegetarian. So definitely cheese, yogurt. Actually the day after I ate yogurt and halfway through, I was like, oh wait, this is the same. Like it took me a few days to actually grasp how I have to change my habits.
It's weird how it hits people like a ton of bricks.
I know, it's really weird. And it wasn't until, it's weird because that was I don't remember the year exactly, but that was around 5 or 6 years I had met a medical doctor in Armenia, because I'm originally Armenian, but born and raised in Lebanon. He was working out, doing cardio, running up and down a set of stairs in the capital of Armenia. It's called Cascade, which means waterfall, like, I suppose. And it's just like 20 minutes of just stairs that you have to run up. It's really high because then you have an amazing view on the city. And I was sitting on the top with my friend watching sunrise and he was just running up and down, up and down. And it's really exhausting. And when he sat down, we started talking to him. I said, can I ask you, how old are you? And he said, he started laughing. He said, I'm 60 years old. And I was like, wow. And why are you doing this? This is really intense. And he was going to climb a mountain. And he said 2 years ago at 58 years old, I was extremely unhealthy. I was overweight. I had health issues. And I realized as a doctor, I have to make an example. And I switched to a vegan diet. That was the first time I actually meet a vegan. And I hear someone talking about veganism. And obviously I told him, oh, vegan. So where do you get your protein from? And he started laughing. And he said, as a doctor, I promise you can get all the protein you need in a plant-based diet. And believe it or not, it turns out that he was in the same class as my friend's father. Who was like my friend who was sitting next to me. We exchanged emails and a few weeks later he sent us photos of him at the finishing climbing the mountain.
Yeah.
So
it's impressive.
It's only recently that I remembered this story. I haven't really talked about this that much. It was really,
yeah,
it was such a long time ago that I never remembered that I actually met this 60-year-old vegan.
Wow. Yeah. It's so funny to think that you asked someone where they got protein.
I know, right? I know.
And there was a point where I asked questions like, yeah, that too. There was a point where I made fun of vegan people. And wow, now no one would ever be able to imagine that, right?
But yeah,
everyone started somewhere. Not everyone was born vegan. And that's,
definitely.
I wish people would understand that.
Yeah.
Every vegan said at one point that they would never be vegan.
Exactly. I've said that because when I was vegetarian, I was open about it. I opposed non-vegetarianism. So
yeah,
people did ask me, so are you going to go vegan? And I always said, no, that's kind of extreme. Like vegans, like they,
yeah,
I think that's for their health or something. I just didn't have any information on it.
That's crazy. So you obviously went vegan, and then how did you get into activism?
Yeah, so the same day or the day after going vegan, I watched two more documentaries, one called Behind the Mask about the Animal Liberation Front, and the second one called, if I'm not mistaken, When a Tree Falls, about the Earth Liberation Front.
Okay.
And that kind of inspired me, but it was more like it gave me knowledge about a certain movement that existed. And a year after being vegan and non-active, I came across photos on the internet of activists in London in the metro doing the Earthlings experience. And that's when it clicked for me, like, oh yeah, of course. I mean, veganism is kind of good because I'm not contributing, but I actually have to get active like these people in London. You know, I should do some activism.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked for groups in Barcelona, and I found out that a few people were doing that every couple of weeks. So I started joining them, and we did that type of activism for a while.
Amazing. Do you have a favorite type of activism?
At the moment, I would say the university and school lectures has been my favorite, yeah, because of the outcome, because it's very easy for me to actually evaluate and see the results, because I always have the students follow fill up an anonymous survey after the lecture. And mm-hmm. It's been absolutely amazing seeing the results of how much like 4 hours in a university can do as opposed to four hours on the street. So
yeah,
at the moment, that's definitely my favorite. But I'm also like completely aware that this is not what everyone can or would like to do. And so I'm open and respect all types of activism, of course.
Mm-hmm. Is there a response you got from a student that you want to share that was powerful? Or
I've had
probably lots.
Yes,
I would assume. Yeah.
I don't want to sound arrogant, but I've
yeah,
like it was a lot, because I did do the first year I did 33 speeches, and
wow,
the last 15,
that's amazing.
The last 15 were in Portugal, and each speech was like between 50 to 200 students. So imagine all the feedback that I would get. I've read them all because I wanted to also see if there's something that is not working well. So because I asked people, mm-hmm, what would you change about the speech, or what did you not like or not appreciate about the speech, and things like that. But I've had people who have started doing activism message me on Instagram months later saying like, hey, I'm an activist now thanks to your speech. I've had people organize speeches themselves because they became vegan and they started doing speeches.
That's amazing.
So it's really amazing. I'm really lucky. I was able to give these lectures because the amount of students that are open to the information and want to learn is really amazing.
And it's great that you're not only making vegans, but you're making activists, because that's,
yeah,
where the real impact actually,
yeah,
happens.
One of the questions I had on the survey was, because obviously when you go to schools, they're under 18, and most of them obviously live with their parents, so they can't necessarily change their diet,
yeah,
straight away. So one of the questions was, after the speech, what would you like to do as an action? And obviously it's a multiple choice answer that they can choose many from. Obviously, a lot of them put 10% put that it didn't really affect them, and the 90% were either reducing, becoming vegan, but also 60% of the total said, I want to become active for the animals and the environment. So maybe at least for now they can do activism, but that's because they can't fully change everything. But the second they turn 18 and they have, or they have independence, they will change for sure.
So how did you get involved in university talks? If someone wants to do that, what are the steps to...
Actually, I got a message. I don't remember which university was the first one, but I got a message from a student in a university in Europe saying, hey, would you do lectures if we were able to set one up for you here? And I thought, well, I've never really thought about this because, I mean, it doesn't look like it now because most people don't know my past, but I really... feared speaking in front of even my own classmates when I was a kid. I was so shy about it. So I started reading all these books about giving speeches. I bought the book of TED Talk. You know, they have their own book of how to prepare a talk for a TED Talk, or books by Dale Carnegie about public speaking and things like that. And I trained as much as I could. And I made a few Instagram stories saying, this is what I want to do. If anybody wants to set one up, contact me. All you have to do is talk to your university, fix the room and the date, and I'll show up. No cost involved, obviously, because I want to do this for free. I want it to be as accessible as possible. And at the time, I was really lucky. I got around 40 or 50 invitations. I wasn't able to do all of them. But if anybody wants to get into this, they can do the same thing. Just put it on your Instagram or Facebook or whatever platform you're using, on which, or all the platforms, and check if people are willing to help you out, set something up. Because especially universities are really easy because the students can organize separately. The school is more complicated because they have to stop a few classes and bring all the students to the hall. But it's not the same with universities because students have more independence. So I think people overestimate how complicated it is. It's much easier than it seems.
Yeah, you just have to put it out there, essentially. Mm-hmm. Now, you are a full-time activist, so I guess I'm sure a lot of people want to know how that's possible. How does someone become a full-time activist?
Yeah, so when I quit my job to become a full-time activist, I had already been doing activism for a while. So relatively, a lot of people knew what I was doing. So it was easier for me to make this decision because when I announced it, I also launched a Patreon page, which is basically a website where people can support whatever work you're doing. On a monthly basis, they can delete or edit their pledge whenever they want, starting $1. And so I launched that and I thought, you know what, if people see any value in what I'm doing, this will work. If it doesn't, as I said earlier, I'll just try to get any job that I can. And thankfully it worked well. It wasn't, of course, easy, especially at first. That's why I started doing, was selling vegan clothing as well. I started what today is Ethics Over Habits, which is a clothing brand, a merchandise brand, from which all the profits I use to fund my activism. At the time, I was selling hoodies and I was doing it all on Instagram. People would message me their address and then PayPal me the money and I would just go to the post office and ship it. And that helped a lot. So I'm not going to lie, it's not something easy and I still struggle with making financial decisions with activism because I have to make sure, can I fund a certain project I'm working on? So I would definitely say if you're gonna do this, if literally no one knows what you're doing, no one knows who you are, and you quit your job and the same day launch a Patreon, unless you have a lot of saving, you're gonna struggle. Yeah. So I would say do as much as you can, save up as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And then try your best to put it out there and hopefully people will support what you're doing.
Yeah. Now, are there resources that have helped you along the way in terms of creating presentations or just being a full-time activist in general?
Not really. I literally just turned around to look at the books that I have to say which ones are helpful. So if anybody knows about Dale Carnegie or Carnegie, I'm not sure, different people pronounce it in different ways, but it's Carnegie. He has written many books that are about human communication. So whether that is convincing people of things or presenting things to people or giving public speeches and things like that. His books helped me a lot because I needed that information. I needed to know what are the ways I should approach a person, what are the ways I should talk to a person in order to have them listen to the message that I'm trying to share with them, things like that. Other than that, as resources for social media, I mean, not I didn't use a specific vegan resource, but there's for YouTube, there's a channel called Think Media, and I don't know, they have millions of subscribers, and they basically give tips to people about how to use YouTube and how to make sure they get as many views as possible for their message to be out there. For Instagram, I've done the same. I've just watched a lot of videos and I've studied everything. Mostly on YouTube as much as I can. Even things related to giving speeches, I would say like
YouTube's great,
it's this huge platform that you can use to either watch funny cat videos or educate yourself
yeah.
on
In every way possible.
exactly. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Awesome. I'm gonna switch topics here a little bit
Yeah.
because I'm getting notifications as we're talking, and I
Okay.
thought it'd be actually great to talk about. So today I posted on my story about impossible foods,
Yeah.
which I'm assuming you're aware of.
Yes.
But if anyone listens to this and doesn't know, a little bit of a backstory. So Impossible Foods came out with this very meat-like burger, which has swept the world, and I think almost every restaurant has added it to their menu, which is good because now there's an option. However, in order to get this burger made, there were ingredients that hadn't been consumed by humans. So in order to get it FDA approved,
Yeah.
they tested it on rats, 188 rats to be exact, and then they killed them all after.
Yeah.
So I would love to get your thoughts on this. And if do you think it's okay that they killed 188 rats to serve the greater good and make a larger impact in the end?
Yes.
Because, I mean, Impossible Foods' mission is to stop the exploitation of
Of
animals,
course.
but it's conflicting because in order to do so, they went
Yeah.
and did animal testing and killed 188 animals.
Yeah, so this is one of those like debates that has shaken the movement a lot. I'm sure you're aware of that. I've even shared a video on YouTube about this subject, and I got both a lot of support and a lot of hate for it. But I'll just share my personal view on it. So from a
I would love that.
utilitarian point of view, if you're gonna look at the bigger picture, does killing 188 rats, let's say, just is it justified because eventually you're going to save a certain amount of cows instead? The question comes down to two things. Do you have proof that it's going to save a certain amount of cows? If yes, how many, more or less? The second question is, did you have to do the test? So, let's start with the second one. They did not have to do the test. There was this rumor that they were obliged by the FDA, but even if you ask them, if I'm not mistaken, I've seen screenshots myself, they did not have to do the test. It was completely voluntarily, which for me is obviously never justified. The second question is, do we know it's gonna save a certain amount of cows? We may never really know, but so far, from what we know, the answer is, from the data and information that we have, the answer is no. The reason why I'm saying that is obviously it hasn't been like 25 years since it's out for us to really know the final answer. But for example, they introduced the Impossible Burger in Burger King. And the CEO of Burger King was doing an interview and they said, what was the impact of the Impossible Foods? And he said, well, we didn't really see our customers change their usual order. We just saw new customers show up, and as a result, it boosted the sales of our
Everything else.
meat-based burger. Because what happened is all these vegans start going to Burger King, and they took their non-vegan friends with them, who grabbed the non-vegan burger instead. So unfortunately, I mean, for me personally, anything that is experimented on animals is not considered vegan just by the definition of veganism itself,
I agree.
especially when it was a voluntary decision to experiment on animals. However, it doesn't mean that I'm against the existence of the Impossible Burger. I think it's amazing it's out there, but I believe that the market of Impossible Burger is non-vegans. I don't believe personally that vegans should support the Impossible Burger, because they have also said, so many activists have contacted them, and there's so many screenshots out there, and people can try this themselves if they don't believe it. They have also said that they're open to the idea of doing experiments again. So it's not like they're saying, ah, oh, sorry, we won't do it again. We acknowledge that it's wrong. They're saying, we might do this again in the future. And I'm just really not comfortable supporting a company that that has done this, and they might do it again, especially when I don't need a burger to be vegan. I mean,
yeah,
it's not that difficult to be vegan without having the Impossible Burger.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird because I actually read an article, obviously conflicting articles, but the one I read said that they don't plan on doing animal testing again, but
that's interesting.
Who knows? Yeah.
I hope really that knows? If that's like the right information, I hope that it's something mm-hmm. that they have, that was the opposite and they changed their minds, which is amazing if they have.
Yeah. I wish I remembered I didn't look at what date it was written or anything, but I did find it today. So hopefully it was recent.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. So with that said then, would you promote Impossible Foods to people or no?
No, I would promote other vegan burger companies that do not test on animals. For the same reason, I would not promote a deodorant or makeup company that doesn't have animal products in the product, but is experimented on animals. Like, what is the difference between... Mm-hmm. Let's say, I don't know, personally, I don't know, because I don't use makeup, but what are certain, like, what?
Yeah, like L'Oreal. Okay. Like promoting L'Oreal, exactly.
If L'Oreal had a certain, like, is mascara tested on animals? Is that what they test?
Well, L'Oreal's mascara would be tested on animals.
So let's say not only was it tested on animals, but it also contained a certain animal product or byproduct. And then they were like, guess what? We just made this new one. It doesn't have that certain animal product or byproduct. However, it's still tested on animals. Does that mean it's vegan?
Right.
What is the difference between the Beyond the Impossible Burger and any makeup or cleaning detergent that is still tested on animals? For me, it's all the same.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I mean, I definitely don't need to eat the Impossible Burger, and I probably won't promote it either, but in terms of suggesting it to non-vegan friends and family, I might do, but it is very conflicting for sure.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I would rather the option to be there for non-vegans to choose, because I think it probably in a few years or a few decades, it will save more animals than it has done harm to.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So would you, I don't know, maybe you have already, because I know McDonald's has come out or is coming out with a vegan burger. Would you try that?
No, because I'd rather support vegan businesses. So it's actually interesting because I have in the past tried a vegan burger. I don't remember if it was McDonald's or Burger King. It was in Finland where, you know, they test things much earlier than other countries. I have done it in the past, but I hadn't really given it much thought. And the reason why I wouldn't do it is because there's a few things. We have to be realistic here. Is a very, very, very percentage of vegans, less than 1% of the population of a certain country, gonna affect the sales of a certain product in McDonald's, you know? The CEO of McDonald's, they were doing an interview, I think on Bloomberg, if I'm not mistaken, around a year ago. And they said, are you planning on putting out a vegan burger? And they said, we want to, but we just don't know who the market is. We're still doing a study on that. What does that mean? It's not the vegans. Because if the vegans were the market, they would go like, yeah, because the vegans are the market. Mm-hmm. But vegans are not big enough in numbers for McDonald's or Burger King to make a burger for us. Imagine a company or a shop that decides to make a new product for less than 1 or 2% of the population of the country. That's a waste of money.
Do you know what the percentage of vegans is worldwide?
So worldwide, I would say definitely less than 3%, but most countries less than 2%. I think for the United States it's around 2.5, but the numbers are very conflicting. Unfortunately, a lot of vegan,
hard to measure. Yeah,
it's very hard to measure, and unfortunately a lot of vegan websites, because of the idea of them getting more clicks and shares, inflate in a very horrible way those numbers, and I think that's very harmful, because it gives us a false illusion of our impact. Go ahead.
No, and that those numbers wouldn't even count like people who are maybe vegetarian or flexitarian or are thinking about giving up vegan products.
So for example, there was a study that said something like, I think 9% of 9% of a certain demographic of a country identify as.
I think it's Canada.
No, I think it was the UK. I might be mistaken.
You know what? It probably is the UK.
Yeah, and they were like 9% of UK, blah, blah, blah. They identify as vegan. And then you looked at the study and it said that they asked environmentalists if they're vegan, and only 9% said yes. So this is, you twist this story to say 9% of the population identifies as vegan when it's actually, and you make it sound like it's a good news when it's actually a bad news, because only 9% of the environmentalists identify as vegan, you're doing a disservice. And I think for us to have the good impact, you know, for us to have the right strategies and actually calculate how much results our actions are giving, we have to be realistic. And there's nothing wrong if the reality is negative, but we have to be realistic. Mm-hmm. People sometimes...
So we can strategize.
Exactly. People think I'm being negative when I say things like this, but it's not that I'm being negative. I'm being realistic. And it happens to be that the reality is kind of bad. But we have to know that it's bad so that we work better.
Yeah, we can make changes and see what we're doing wrong. And
yeah, exactly.
I think that 9% that I thought of was Canada is actually where I live in Canada. Oh. I think there's actually in Vancouver here, it's like 9 or 10% of people in Vancouver are vegan. It's
that's
huge.
Really great.
I just moved here, but I'm pretty sure that's where I got that number from.
Okay, I can see. I already googled it because that's really interesting. It's that 8.6% are vegetarian, 3.9% are vegan.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, 3.9 is like quite big. That's, and hopefully the vegetarian will start switching into veganism. So
for sure. I just gotta get more active over here. Now, obviously the amount of vegan options are increasing, but here we go with like the realism is the amount of animals being killed is increasing too. So can we confidently say that we're not actually winning?
In the ways that we claim we are winning, yes, I would say we can confidently say that we're not winning, because we create these, unfortunately, super positive illusion-based stories that we are winning and we're going to achieve a vegan world in 5 years and I don't know what, which again, we have to be realistic in order to put a strategy and know in how many years we can actually dream of a vegan world. As you said, the number of vegan products is rising, which is absolutely amazing. However, I did a video about this because a lot of people get so uncomfortable talking about this subject because they don't want to face this, because a lot of activists portray it as if it's the opposite. It is not a fact that we are winning, because more and more animals are getting killed every single year. And this is not my opinion. Everybody can.
It's facts.
Everybody can look at the data on the website Our World in Data, if I'm not mistaken. It was either University of Cambridge or
Our World
in
Data.
Cambridge or Oxford. I don't remember. Okay. It's an amazing website for all kinds of data. Anyway, so the main problem is the world population growth. We just are not catching up with the world population growth of non-vegans for us to have the impact that we claim that we're having, which is less animals are getting killed, because that's not what's happening. The more people are born, the more non-vegans are born. the more animals are going to get killed. And the thing is, even if vegans are born, more animals get killed because of the environmental impact of having kids, obviously depending on where you live in the world. So one other thing that's happening is there's a few countries called the BRICS countries. So that's B-R-I-C-S, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. So these countries are five countries that represent more than 40% of the world population. And they are growing very fast, and so is their consumption of animal products. So if five countries...
And you said Russia, Brazil, South Africa...
India, China.
India.
More than 40% of the world population. And in a few years, these countries are going to rule the world in terms of consumption and production of products, all kinds of products, because of the resources and the population that they have. So we just are not catching up with such growth that we're seeing. And that's fine, because we are not superheroes. We can't always do the best. But it doesn't mean that we should ignore this fact. Because if we ignore it, then we're never going to address it. If we know that this bad thing is happening, at least we can talk about it and we can address it.
For sure.
What's also happening is that, yes, more non-vegans are definitely... eating more plant-based products, which is also why the sale of plant-based products is booming. But the consumption per capita of animal-based products is also booming. So, for example, milk consumption in the US. I don't know if you remember, I think at the beginning of this year, there was a huge dairy company that went bankrupt.
Yes, I do remember that.
And do you remember the headlines of all the vegan activists and websites? We're winning, we're doing this, we're taking down the industry, things like that.
Lots of memes.
The thing is, milk consumption per capita in the States has never been as high as it is today. It's only growing, it's not going down. Companies going bankrupt is good news for us, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's good news for the animals. It might mean that there's more competition and therefore this company was not really making profit anymore because of certain trade deals and things like that. So we can't really claim that this dairy company went bankrupt because vegan activists were so impactful that they had to close down one of the biggest dairy companies, because that's just not the truth. If that was the truth, the milk consumption per capita in the United States would not be growing every single year. So we do have to always check out the data and see how much are we affecting. So for example, in the UK, it's not always growing. It's going down, going up, going down, going down the past few years, thankfully. So maybe it is having a certain impact in the UK, but definitely not in the States.
Yeah. It's great. I'm actually originally from South Africa, and I was there in January, and it was crazy to see how many vegan options there were. Like, I've never seen options like that before, but yeah, as much as those options are there, it's unfortunately everything else is growing as well.
I heard it's growing there. I was actually supposed to give a few speeches and lectures in South Africa in April, but then Corona happened, so everything got canceled.
Yes, everything is canceled for now. The other thing, going back to the dairy industry, is what's weird about it is in Canada, we actually took dairy off the Canadian Food Guide. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Canadian Food Guide, but it basically tells you what every human should be consuming, and we took it off. But for some reason, we're still funding the dairy industry and giving them millions and millions of dollars. Yes. I'm not sure if you know much about
subsidies.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
I'm just trying to see, because I talked about it very recently. I'm wondering if I have it in my notes. No, I don't. Because usually when I make a video, I just delete the notes afterwards. I shouldn't have done that. But there was just recently subsidies in Canada given to dairy and egg industry, and I think just animal farmers in general. And it just happened actually a few weeks ago. And all the tax money that is basically taken by the people is covering, I mean, millions and millions of dollars, actually more than, I don't know how many hundreds of billions, is given to farmers. I think even it was 1.1 billion US dollars or 1.4 Canadian dollars.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
1.4 billion Canadian dollars is being given out to farmers insane. Because of the pandemic and the effect it had on sales. So if all these subsidies being given, then how much really are we impacting? So one thing I have to be clear about is not all subsidies cover the loss based on the fact that it wasn't sold, but a lot of subsidies are there in case of emergencies or disasters. And obviously the pandemic could be considered a disaster, which the farmers could not have seen coming, and therefore all their losses are covered. This is why it's really important to get politically active as well. If I'm not mistaken, in Canada, there's a group called Nations Rising that is working on the subsidies.
Yes. They're incredible.
I just got in touch with them like 10 days ago to get all the data from Canada because I wanted to see how it works in Canada as well. But yeah.
Yeah, Nations Rising. If anyone that's listening, definitely go give them a follow.
Yeah, they're definitely doing amazing work. And anyone who's listening to this, and if you feel you have the knowledge and the courage to get into politics or fight against the lobbying of this industry, I really, really encourage you to do so. It's really important. We should definitely have more people doing that.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, that probably is the most effective way to create and spark change.
Yeah, it depends on the programs that they have. For example, in the States, they would cover the cost. I mean, from what I found, the only program they have that covers the cost of the farmers is for the dairy industry. And they only cover once it drops less than $16, I think, per 100 liter, or I don't remember how it was. But even then, they cover only 40%. Of the loss, or 60, either 60 or 40, one or the other. So we have to know in each country what are the programs in place and how much percentage of their loss is being covered, so that we know if we were to achieve change, are the subsidies going to cover the impact of our activism, or are they actually going to have the loss?
Wow, that's interesting to think about. Wow.
Because a lot of the subsidies,
I did not
most
think
of
about
the subsidies,
that.
To my knowledge, from what I've read so far, goes to the feed. So the corn and soy industry for the animals that the farmers have to buy. And then the rest of the subsidies, some programs are there for disasters and emergency cases, and then some of them are for profit loss.
Right. Yeah, I think that's something that I want to definitely dive into a little bit more, but definitely need to educate myself on all of it.
Yeah. We all have to do that.
Yeah. And obviously it's really hard to do a lot of actions right now due to COVID, and trying to find ways to spread awareness and create change is hard because a lot of mass actions have been put on hold. So is there anything that you could suggest to people that are listening and are itching to get active, what they could do online?
Yeah,
maybe
I think one thing that we can all agree on is that because of the situation and the pandemic, a lot of people are spending much more time on social media. So this is the time to do as much content as you can. Like, I'm trying on YouTube to put out a video every 2 days. Just because I know more and more people are on lockdown, more and more people are spending more time on YouTube. If people can start TikTok, that's an amazing platform with the reach that they have. Unfortunately, it checks where your location is and it shows your content only mostly to those people. So it's not ideal for me because I'm in Indonesia, and I mean, there's a huge language and culture barrier for them to actually be interested in my content on TikTok. So it's not working out for me. But anyone else, if you're in Canada and obviously Yeah,
get on TikTok.
This is the time before the organic reach drops, because platforms are Instagram are making it very difficult to reach people. So we kind of have to follow the other, let's say, platforms that are giving us the option to reach a lot of people.
Right. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was I saw that you took the Liberation Pledge. And I watched your video and it really made me rethink. And I would be lying if I said that I don't want to do it, but I'm scared. So maybe you could tell everyone listening what exactly that is and why you did it and why it works for you, because obviously it won't work for everyone else.
So the Liberation Pledge consists of deciding to no longer share a table on which animal body parts or secretions are being served. If I'm not mistaken, it also adds a few other things, such as try to only eat at restaurants that are vegan or support vegan businesses over non-vegan businesses, for very obvious reasons, of course.
Right.
I mean, mostly people talk about the sharing the table part, so that's what I'm going to talk about now. I always thought that this is the right thing to do, because if I would not show any type of tolerance for someone who's actively being racist or sexist or homophobic in front of me, then why would I show the same, why would I show tolerance for the same person who is engaging in speciesism, eating animals and their body parts and their secretions? And if I want to be consistent in my stance, then I have to apply that for non-vegans the same way I would apply for anyone who's actively discriminating someone in front of me. However, I always wondered, will this work? You know, am I just going to isolate myself from everyone? Am I going to have really ugly arguments with close friends of mine from back home and things like that? But I decided to give it a try, and until now, it's been 2 years that I've taken the pledge. I have not had a single person say, then I don't want to sit with you. So the reason why, I'll get more into detail. The way I do it is, if I'm going to meet up with someone and have something to eat, or if I'm out with someone and they say, let's grab something to eat, I just very honestly share the following with them. I say, you know, I'm an animal rights activist, and for the past 2 years, I've realized that I just don't feel comfortable sitting in front of someone or sharing the table with someone who is eating animal products. Not only because it reminds me of times where I've been on slaughterhouse kill floors or inside farms where I know what's happening to animals, but also because I don't feel comfortable appropriating or being accepting of your action of eating animals. So for the past 2 years, I've stopped doing that. And whenever I'm going to share a table with someone, I just ask them if they mind eating a vegan meal this time. You know, it's just one meal. That's all I'm asking for. And if that's a huge issue, that's completely fine. We can just grab something else, both of us separately, and then we'll meet up again. Not a single person has said, okay, then go somewhere else. I'll go somewhere else. And then we'll meet up again later. People just don't do that, because it makes them sound so ridiculous and childish. You know, if someone is saying just this one meal, share a vegan meal with me, why would you say no? A lot of people eat a lot of vegan meals a lot of times throughout the year without paying attention. So it's not that huge of a favor you're asking. Now, the main issue that people have with this is when it comes to family. I applied this to my family actually before applying to friends, because I wasn't sure how it's going to work out. And it worked out completely well. My family decided to only make vegan meals. The few times they weren't vegan, I just sat by myself on another table. And that sent a very strong message, because they felt bad. And because they felt bad, now 99% of the time, it's almost always vegan. Also because both of my parents ended up becoming vegan themselves. So,
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah.
Another thing that I want to say is that it's also, you know, people say, yeah, but if I eat with others who are not vegan, then they can try my food and they can see that vegan is tasty, you know?
Or you can talk
but the
about
thing
it.
Is, you can do that while they're eating vegan food as well. And it will even be more effective. This is why there was a study where they had two different groups fill out a survey about moral consideration towards other animals. One of the groups was munching on small vegan snacks, the other one on non-vegan snacks. And it turned out that those who were eating non-vegan snacks were kind of more against the moral consideration towards other animals because while they were answering the question, they were actively not taking
Doing the
exactly.
opposite.
So it showed that
Yeah.
psychologically, the chances of you agreeing with something while you're actively doing the opposite are lower than if you're doing something that is aligned. So if you're gonna talk about veganism with that person, your chances of that person listening to you and agreeing with you is much higher if they're sharing vegan mac and cheese or a vegan burger with you than if they're munching on animal products. So
That makes
exactly,
total
it's just
sense.
much better, you know. I do want to say before anyone feels bad about this, obviously not everyone is in the situation to take this pledge or decision, you know. It doesn't have to be like this pledge and you have to like make a tattoo on your face that you don't sit with other people, you know.
Well, I mean, if you want
Yeah, I mean, if that's your way,
to.
sure, go ahead. But not everyone is in this situation. I'm not trying to shame or blame anyone if they're not able to do this, you know.
Ready,
Maybe
yeah.
you'll be in the future, maybe you'll never be. That's fine. This is not a requisite to be vegan, you know. You can be vegan and still do this. I just think it's better if you don't, while fully respecting the fact that not everyone might have the chances or the privilege that I had with the friends and the family members that I have.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that come up for me is I'm very fortunate to work for vegan companies now, but previously I don't think I would have been able to do it because I'm just thinking about potential work
Yeah.
lunches where people have meetings and they have to be present, but I don't know if their works would maybe would necessarily have vegan food
Yeah.
available. But I've really been thinking about it lately because I am very immersed in the vegan culture out here in Vancouver, and I work for vegan businesses, and I'm never around animal
That's
products
nice.
anymore. But the Christmas season is coming up, and I'm going to be with my family who is not
Yeah.
vegan. So it's going to be really hard for me to have gone from being around vegan food for so long to watching my family who I love eating animals. So the last couple of days, I've been going back and forth about it, and I'm wondering if now is like a good
To let
time to do
them.
it. I don't to let yeah to see if it would work. I don't know. It's tough because at the same time, they've been so supportive of me for all these years and have made options for me, and
Yeah.
I feel they might think it's disrespectful, and I don't know. It's
I
def
think
it's
that the
tough.
best way to go around it is to make them realize that it's disrespectful for them to do this when it means something so important to you. So the way I did it with my parents was I said, listen, I literally dedicate my life to changing something in this world. I don't feel comfortable watching my own family members that I love so much doing the opposite, like literally undoing all the efforts that I'm putting in.
Yeah, that I'm trying to
So
do.
that worked for me.
I'm taking notes.
So yeah, maybe, I mean, obviously it also depends how your parents or other family members look at veganism. For example, my parents were not against it, but they just didn't think of it as much of an important issue. So it was easy for me to say, like,
Yeah.
so I didn't have to argue the ethics because they were already in agreement with the ethics.
They were
Yeah.
aware of that. Yeah.
So it depends on where the family members are with the ethical side, of course.
So what was their stance? Like, what
Well, in the
was.
beginning, it was obviously a shock, like, oh, don't do this. You're gonna make things so much more complicated, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, my mom really loves cooking and she takes any type of cooking as like a
It's fun
challenge, you
for her.
know? So it was like, okay,
Yeah,
fine. Now I
okay.
have to make everything vegan. So all the meat-based things that she knows that my sisters or her grandchildren like, I just have to make the vegan version. And so she took it as a challenge and she nailed it. So she's an amazing cook.
Yeah, it was a place for her to
Yeah.
be creative, so that was probably
Yeah.
fun for her.
So they took it that way. My sisters got a bit upset because when their kids were there, who are of course not as easy when it comes to food as adults are, sometimes non-vegan food was made for them and I just refused to sit down. So was a bit weird, but again, never had a fight.
Yeah.
They completely accepted the fact that I've taken this decision and they have to respect it. As in, respect it that if I decide to sit by myself, that's my decision, you know?
Yeah, and I think I am at a point where, to be honest, I would rather just sit by myself. Because, yeah, as you said, I am dedicating my life to doing something and I can't sit at a table where people are doing the complete opposite.
If I was walking down the street with a friend of mine and he, sorry for the example, but just like on the top of my head, he, like a woman was passing by and he grabbed her ass real quick or something like that, I would not just shut up and continue walking with him. I would actively oppose his action. And if he didn't change it, I would just not walk with him because I don't feel comfortable being apologetic towards his action. And then this action could be replaced by any other discriminatory or disrespectful action, of course. It could be like racist slur and anything.
For sure.
And I see it the same way with animals. You know, I don't feel comfortable sitting in front of someone and acting like it's okay for them to do that, because then that makes them think that it's not as serious of an issue, because they know it is.
And it is. Yeah.
Because the same person, if they did something, so for example, to change the example, if it was a racist action that the person took. So if you're sitting down on a table with someone and a person is serving you and this person said something very racist to that person, to the server, and you just continued eating with that person without saying anything. Exactly.
What does that teach them?
Now, obviously, that person would not do that because they know that you would not be accepting of that. However, you're accepting of them eating animals. So what does that say about the cause of the animals? It's just not as important. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it.
No, I completely agree with you. And I think as time goes on, it gets harder and harder for me. I remember, I think it was a year, maybe 2 years ago. I do have a group of friends that isn't vegan, and I was away with them, and they were cooking ribs one night, and I told them that I can't sit at the table. And I actually sat outside by myself and had dinner. And that was the first time I did that. And it definitely made an impact. Like one of them came outside and sat with me and said, you know what, I feel really bad, and I looked at my food differently.
That's the goal. Like, I've only had one friend I was even scared to share this with because I knew I wasn't gonna like his reaction, and he teased me and made a few nasty comments for 5 minutes. And then ever since then, we've had at least five lunches together, and I don't even have to bring it up anymore because he knows that that's the deal. You know, if we're going to share a table, he's going to eat vegan. And people like food. People like good taste. If they don't get the good taste from a non-vegan meal, it doesn't mean they can't get good taste. They can just get the good taste from a vegan meal. It's not like you're depriving them from sensory pleasure. You're just...
From eating. So you can still
eat. Exactly. You're just saying this time, just get your pleasure from eating plant-based foods. That's it.
Yeah. It reminds me of my dad. He's a huge meat eater. And whenever we go to a vegan restaurant or something, he looks at this big menu and he says, well, what am I going to eat? And I think, Dad, anything. You can have
literally
50
anything.
Things on the menu. Like, what do you mean? It's that one's gonna be a struggle for sure. So I saw that you also have a free ebook that you're working on called When Animals and Logic Meet. Maybe you could tell me a bit about are you changing the name?
When Animal Rights and Logic Meet, because some people confuse it with whether or not animals have the capacity to logic. The ebook is about logical fallacies. So I've realized in the movement there's this repetition of how we reply to certain questions, and it's all the same thing. You mentioned this, you mentioned that, you mentioned that lions cannot survive on a vegan diet, blah blah blah. You mentioned that lions this, lions that, or protein this, or canine teeth. You know, it's all the same things being repeated over and over again, and it takes so much time and effort.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, we kind of get out of the subject of animal rights when I start arguing about these things, because whether we like it or not, There are studies out there that are not in the favor of veganism. This is a fact. Peer-reviewed studies that are not always in favor of veganism. And there are also peer-reviewed studies that are in favor of veganism against the first ones that I mentioned. So people just get caught up in mentioning their sources and studies and this and that, when they could just expose or explain why the person and the argument that they're giving contains a logical fallacy. So I decided to write down all the logical fallacies that people use in while arguing against veganism. And I made the ebook. It's going to be a
debunking them, essentially.
How every single logical fallacy is used by non-vegans and how we can explain that to them and why it's wrong. So for those of the listeners who don't know what a logical fallacy is, it like fallacies are common errors in reasoning. So it's the base point of the argument. It's whether or not it contains reasoning or logic. And if there's like reasoning errors, then your argument doesn't hold because its base is not logical. It's a fallacy. So it's an illegitimate argument. Very easy example. You know, someone can say, well, in nature, other animals eat each other, therefore we can eat animals.
Yeah.
So you can get into the argument of why other animals do that and whether or not they do it out of necessity and how their bodies are made, blah, blah, blah. Or you can just say that is an appeal to nature. You're appealing to nature in order to justify something, and that is a logical fallacy, because just because something happens in nature doesn't mean that thing is good enough or moral. So if you appeal to nature in order to justify your action, then you're taking part in a logical fallacy. Because, for example, if in nature animals rape each other, or some animals even kill and eat their own cubs, does that mean that we could do the same actions and appeal to nature and justify it? No, we would never agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So the ebook, under each logical fallacy, I also explain how animal rights activists might mistakenly use the same logical fallacy. So there's another logical fallacy called ad hominem, and it's when you attack a person's character and as an extension oppose their argument. So person X says something, person X is stupid, therefore what person X said is wrong. So this is a logical fallacy because you're using a character attack in order to debunk what they're saying. And unfortunately, animal rights activists can fall into the same trap. You know, we sometimes unfortunately mm-hmm. call people we attack their characters and try to debunk what they're saying, but that's not a good reasoning. That's not the right way of debunking something, let's say. So the ebook was supposed to come out at least like a month or two ago, but I decided to, because it's going to be free, I wanted to also be very accessible. So I'm getting it translated to be published in 19 languages, and 18 languages are done. I'm just waiting for the 19th to be over so that I can.
What's the 19th?
It's Spanish. They're just finishing. We have. Let me see. Just in case someone is interested in knowing if it's going to be in available.
Yeah.
So we have in Farsi, which is the language of Iran. So Farsi, French, German, Hungarian, Indonesian, Italian, Portuguese, Russian, Swedish, Turkish, Hindi, Dutch, Lithuanian, Spanish, Catalan, Finnish, Romanian, and English. No excuses. And it's free. So you got to read this and learn how you can, it just makes so much easier, you know, just expose a logical fallacy and move on instead of sitting down and arguing back and forth about studies and this and that.
It sounds like something every vegan's going to need in their back pocket. You need to make like a little short, a really small notepad we can put in our back pockets. Definitely. And hand out cards when people ask. What do you think the most logical, like fallacy is, or like question that vegans get, or that you get
there's a few things. I would say appeal to nature is very common. Red herring is also common. It's when they they provide information that is useless to the argument in order to take the attention off of it. There's also
Yeah.
whataboutism. So when they say, "Oh, what about all the animals that are killed in the crops production?" You know, so that's a
I get that one a lot.
And of course, especially on YouTube, ad hominem attacks, so like character attacks, the amount of people that just like say racist things to me in order to attack the message that
Switch the
exactly
conversation.
like you can
Yeah.
be as racist as you want, it doesn't.
Now, one of the last questions I want to ask you is if there's anyone listening who is on the brink of transitioning into veganism and needs that one final push, what would you say to them?
Educate yourself and watch documentaries to learn why this is the right thing to do. So I would always suggest that people watch Dominion, which is a documentary that shows almost all the ways that we exploit other animals. Obviously, it's a graphic documentary, so just a little trigger warning if that might, produce some kind of PTSD or
Yeah.
anything. But it is important to watch to know what these animals are going through and why we should stop harming them in all ways imaginable. There's also other documentaries that are not necessarily about the ethical side, but it's good to have the information, you know. For example, Cowspiracy, about the environmental impact of eating animals. What the Health, or Forks Over Knives, about the health impact of eating animals or a vegan diet. And there's also a very good one about health. It's on YouTube, actually. It's 1 hour long. It's called Uprooting the Leading Causes of Death. It's a presentation by Dr. Michael Greger. Absolutely amazing. So it's
I
really
haven't
good.
heard
I'll
of
send you
that
the link
one.
when we're done.
Yeah, I'd love to listen to that.
See all the information and ask yourself, how could you justify continuing paying for this? And what is it that these animals have that we don't, that makes it okay for them to be victims of what we're doing? So why is it that you feel comfortable doing this to other animals and not to humans? Is there a certain trait that they have that we don't? Because we can, in all the ways that matter, we are similar. They might be different with like certain traits, such as like they have fur instead of skin or feathers or whatever, or they don't speak our language, but these are morally irrelevant traits. It's the same with being against racism. Being against racism doesn't mean you believe all human beings are the same. We're obviously not the same. We all have different IQ levels, creativity, talents, languages, cultures, traditions, religions, gender, sexuality. But being against racism means we acknowledge these differences as morally irrelevant differences, because in the ways that matter, we're the same. And it's the same thing with animals.
We're the same. Oh, it's heartbreaking a little bit. I hope that that is enough
Hope
for a
so.
lot of people because
I'll
it's
share one
very
more
true.
thing. You might need some like
Yeah.
push and information and tools to help you go vegan. Do check out veganbootcamp.org. So yeah,
Vegan
vegan
boot
bootcamp.
camp.
Let me just make sure it's .org and not, yeah, veganbootcamp.org. They have all these like free classes, free help, everything that you need for a whole month. Anything that you need to go vegan, they have it on there. And every time you
That's
finish
amazing.
the classes, you get like a few points, and then you can even use these points to get discounts to buy things from vegan websites.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's so smart.
So it's really
I
nice.
love that.
Yeah.
Veganbootcamp.org. Check
And
that
this
out.
is really nice for activists as well, because for example, you create your account, and then you will have your own invite link. And then when people use your invite link, you can see all the stats, how many people are clicking on your link, how many people are signing up, how many courses are they doing, So you can actually see, yeah, you can have
That's
like
brilliant.
statistics and data about your activism and if people are using your links and are interested and after using your links. Yeah,
And see how
exactly.
effective
Yeah.
you're being. That's super, super cool. Now, Seb, where can everyone find you? Where can our listeners connect with
So
you
for
online?
most of the platforms, it's Seb Alex. So Instagram is seb.alex, YouTube is Seb Alex, Facebook is Seb Alex, also for the page. My website is sebalex.org for all the information about my activism. If anybody's interested to help set up lectures, I'm hoping that in 2021 things will change. And I, because I even had a few invitations from Canadian universities that I would like to.
Oh, that would
Yeah,
be
hopefully
amazing.
2021 will be different and we can do all of that. So anybody who wants to get in contact can check out my website as well, sebalex.org, and then send me an email from there.
Yeah, hopefully the world will be back to
Yes.
normal and
Yes.
sooner than later so we can get back to making the world a better
Definitely.
place. Seb, thanks so much for joining me and for all your efforts to not only save animals' lives, but create a more compassionate and kind world. I
Thank
hope you
you.
stay safe
Thank you
and
for
take care
having
of
me on the show.
yourself. Yeah, of course. And I'm sure I'll see you soon in
Yes,
the virtual
definitely.
world. Again, my name is Claire. Thank you so much. Hit subscribe and do not forget to follow us at Living Cruelty Free with Me on Instagram and Facebook for upcoming episodes.